Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
When I was a boy, my maternal grandfather and I would go for walks along the Little White River on the northern part of the reservation. We walked along the river, over the hills, across the meadows, the prairies, wherever. And this occurred over a few years, in any season of the year. He just liked to walk. He liked the physical activity to walk, and he liked to look at the land. He liked to point things out to me. And I paid attention. But there was something that he did. We would stop every now and then. And he did this frequently. We would stop and he would grab me by the shoulders and he would turn me around and he would make me look at the trail the way we had come to this point. And he would say, "Remember that trail. Remember the way we came." And I dutifully said, "Yes, Grandpa." He did this a lot. Finally, when I was 7, the year before I went away to school, I worked up the nerve to ask him, "Well, Grandpa, why are you saying this? Why are you making me look back?" And his answer was simple enough, and it fell into place for me years later. He said, "One of these times I'm going to send you back down these trails by yourself. And if you don't remember the way, you will be lost." To me, that is a statement about our past. That big quantifiable past that is there, that is larger than anything in our lives. If we don't know how we got to the point that we are as individuals and as a society, but especially as individuals, then we're lost. Because we don't know where we came from. Not the flamboyant warrior with the feathers in his hair and the lance in his hand, which is an iconic image that everybody has of Native people. No, that's not what we were about. That's only part of what we were. Only a small part of what we were as people. The other part is compassion and having a purpose and taking care of each other. Those were the most important things. So that's why ancestry is important to me. That's why ancestry should be important to everybody. No matter who we are, whether we're Native or not, no matter what our culture is, no matter what our society is, no matter what our standing in the community is, I don't care what we do for a living, ancestry is important. You have to know the trail that you came down to be at the point that you are as an individual. You have to look back at that trail, the road that you have walked with your ancestors, their values, kind of people they were, the kind of mistakes they made, the kind of accomplishments they had. They're all a part of me. All of that is part of who I am.
Welcome, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. That was Chief Joseph Marshall, Remembering the Way, on Monique Rhodes' Heartbeat album. What a profound sharing he just left with us. If you don't know where you're coming from, you won't know where you're going. You have to remember the way that you're coming from. And I'm remembering a story of a Native American Indian who had a lot of problems with living in his family, but also he was an alcoholic. And at a very young age, he was only 15, 16, and he left and kind of, you know, struggled for a year or two and ended up joining the military. And lied about his age. But anyway, it was during the time of the Holocaust, and Even while he was out there on his journey, he had bumped into a few friends along the way, and they had, you know, befriended each other. And I'll make a long story short, him and some of the friends also ended up in the military together. And he ended up in a really bad state because of the Holocaust, and they would nail his feet down to the ground to a point that he had gotten so paralyzed that it was so difficult. But one of his friends that he was with at the time when they were drinking and before they joined the army had seen him and knew that there were particular things about to happen in Germany at the time. And if he went in that train, he would definitely go to the gas chambers. And so he sort of made sure he got out of the way and tried to get him off of that train and put him somewhere else where he was given like bones to eat, you know, food that just wasn't even food. And he held that in his heart for a long time. Anyway, American soldiers came in, the war came to an end, the Cold War, and this is a true story. And he ended up in the Veterans Hospital for many years. He was paralyzed, but his spirit was struggling. Then after a while, he decided, I need to go back. He needed to go back to his reservation and to see his mother and his father, who he hadn't spoken to for years. So he ends up going back home, paralyzed, broken, abused, you know, just bruised. And he sees his father, who's a chief, and he just looks at him and says, you're not living. And it makes no sense for you to keep breathing if your spirit is dead. So they have this ritual where they tie a rock with a string on your leg and they throw you in the lake. And you have to decide if you really want to live or not. And would you believe, everyone, that while he was thrown in that lake and he was about to actually take his last breath, he realized that his friend, who he was holding a vengeance for, the whole stuff that he went through in Germany, that actually his friend was giving him whatever rations he could find to save his life. And that moment, as he was about to take his last breath, he forgave, and he was able to pull himself up out of water and find his way back. And then he realized how to live. It's our story, no? Healing, reconciling from our past, our differences. What's the way that you wish to choose to heal your story from within, to heal your nation, to heal a religion, to heal a relationship? It's something that it is sitting in every one of us, the capacity to heal. You can't hate too long. To hate is exhausting. To love isn't. Don't touch the dial. I'm going to have a conversation with Zaina El Khalil, who is in Lebanon. And I enjoyed interviewing her for the Finding Common Ground on the Summer of Peace Summit. That'll be coming up on August 7th to 9th. And I just had to get her on the air first to talk more about her work, her heart, and her passion. But before I get Zaina on the call, let's just take a few moments and breathe and just do a little Om Shanti, perhaps. All right.
Oh.
Welcome back, everyone. That was, I guess you called it, Om Shanti Om. That was from Elizabeth Padilla in San Francisco from the Brahma Kumaris. You're listening to America Meditating Radio, and today we're proud to welcome Zeina El Khalil, who is a lady who believes in the positive impact that art can have on the world. She is an international exhibiting visual artist, author, and cultural activist based in Beirut, who uses visual art, site-specific installations and performance and ritual to explore and heal the war-torn history of Lebanon and other global sites of trauma. Zeina also curates cultural events that create community spaces and platforms for healing and reconciliation, and she's been conducting healing ceremonies across Lebanon by creating site-specific action paintings in locations damaged by extreme violence. She exhibits internationally, including New York, San Francisco, Miami, London, Paris, Tokyo, and Dubai. And during the 2006 invasion of Lebanon, Zeina was one of the first largely followed Middle Eastern bloggers. Her writings are published in the international press, including BBC, CNN, and much more. Today we're honored to welcome Zeina El Khalil. Om Shanti, my sister.
Hello, sister. Thank you so much for having me.
You touched my heart in that interview for Summer of Peace, Finding Common Ground. Why
Thank
not?
You so much.
Why not?
Thank you.
Look,
Thank
you know, your work seeks to create a culture of peace, and you're doing it through love, compassion, forgiveness, and empathy. Now, my million-dollar question to you is, can art really change the world?
Oh, yeah. I not only believe it with my entire heart and soul, but I've spent the past, you know, 5 or 6 years putting that thought into practice and getting tangible results. And I've seen with my own eyes the changes that have happened first with myself and then my community around me.
So what is the creative process that you use to create your artwork?
The central idea, you know, behind most of my work is this thought that can we transmute pain into love, into compassion, into forgiveness? Lebanon presently, in my eyes, I still consider Lebanon to be in a sort of post-war state. Our civil war ended 20 years ago, but we never had a real reconciliation process. We never apologized to each other for what happened. There were also other countries that got involved in the war, and it was really a bloody mess for about 20 years. And then suddenly the war ended. One day we called ceasefire, and then we went back to life, to work as if nothing had happened, and we never really had that chance to go through reconciliation. And so we're still carrying that pain. And I feel that now, maybe 20 years later, we're ready. You know, the wounds are still there, but perhaps they're not as raw. And so it's a golden opportunity to really kind of work on creating these bridges of healing and reconciliation.
Well, 20 years ago, I don't think we had the coping skills or even mechanisms as we even do today. And I think sometimes just the trauma for each one of us individually takes its own time. You can't rush a healing for anyone. It's really up to the individual to be able to do that. Your novel, Beirut, I Love You, is a memoir about your life, which focuses on growing up in Beirut during a period of immense turmoil. What was it like living in those times, and how were you able to channel your energy into being an agent for positive change?
Well, the 90s were quite tumultuous. The city was changing quite rapidly. Like I said, the war just ended, and then people wanted to get back to their previous way of life. But after so many years of pain and, you know, suppression of this pain, the primary instinct was to rebuild as quickly as possible, to celebrate somehow, perhaps not always in the healthiest of ways, because we went from one extreme to another. And, you know, oftentimes the easiest way to suppress pain is through alcohol and drugs and other kind of mind and body and soul numbing things. I just turned 18 when the war ended. And so I always say that Beirut and I, we had our coming of age together. While Beirut was being reborn, I was becoming a woman. And somehow we were both kind of stepping into life. And there was this beautiful weaving that was happening between us. I was learning through her, and she was growing through me. And I immediately felt this sense as an artist that I could contribute to the rebirth in many different ways. And back then, it was more of a type of feminist approach to art making. I felt that as a woman, I had to have my say, and there were things that I wanted to change, the relationship between men and women, the relationship between the city and me. And so it was more of an opportunity to create art that really brought up issues of, you know, being a woman coming of age. And so there was this kind of rebelliousness also in terms of spirit and just this kind of deep, fiery energy. And that is a beautiful source for creativity, for things to emerge from. But it doesn't last, you know, the body changes, the spirit changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that as I grew older and as Beirut became, you know, also evolved, it was time to kind of develop a more maternal, a more loving, a more nurturing relationship to the city, rather than always pointing out, you know, the things that had gone wrong. It was time to really step into the role of, you know, healing and reconciliation. And I think that simultaneously, in my, you know, my age also asked for that as a woman, approaching, you know, in her mid-30s, suddenly there was this deep need to want to have a different relationship with the city and the world.
Yeah, it's interesting because so many of us have been down that journey. You know, we don't have enough wisdom or experience of what's going on around us. And it's natural for the innocence, the purity to emote and wish to do something. But it also parallels our naivety as well, which comes with a lot of emotional debris and unknowingness. You know, like you just don't know. And we get into this like emotional area of trying to fight for the freedom or the goodness, and then realize that this doesn't feel right at a spirit level. It doesn't feel like I'm actually helping the situation. Is it possible to create an object that could attract positive healing energy and bring peace to a land, especially one that has endured such violence?
Definitely. I have spent a long time thinking about this very idea, and because I wanted to get to a place where perhaps the art itself could do the healing, you know, that maybe I could create this thing that I could just leave it somewhere, you know, for example, some of the sites that I work in where I do the healing ceremonies, there are places where either an environmental disaster happened or a massacre took place. There are sites where there are mass graves, you know, under the earth, and I've worked in spaces like that. I've worked in a former concentration camp, and so, you know, I often feel torn. I can't be everywhere at the same time, and so could I actually create some kind of object that I could leave there? And so that was really the theme of my work the last 5 or 6 years, and I experimented with paintings and sculptures. I interviewed all kinds of people, doctors and scientists and quantum physics professors and gurus in the Himalayas and astronomers and all kinds of people. And after the process of doing the work and being with the spaces and eventually learning how to become a channel, a sort of hollow bone where I could just transmit, you know, where it wasn't about what the artist wanted to do, but rather what the space needed, what the universe was asking for. At that moment, I realized that, in fact, you are the object. You can work on yourself on a personal level to become an instrument of peace. And so therefore, wherever you go, whatever you do, if you tune your body back to the source, back to love, then that's eventually what will make the change. And so that really inspired me to also take my work to a community level, where it wasn't just about the paintings and the sculptures, but it was also about bringing the community into these spaces where these massacres happened, where the bombs had dropped, and working on a personal level to kind of create this transmutation on a personal level and within the space and nature inside the abandoned war-torn buildings, on the fields where the massacres happened.
Right. Well, just last year you held a groundbreaking exhibition entitled Sacred Catastrophe, Healing Lebanon. It brought over 10,000 people together for healing,
yeah,
for reconciliation.
Yeah.
And what a profound, I mean, I would do anything to have actually attended one of those, so make sure you tell me when you're doing your next one, because
okay.
I just find that to be so conscience-raising. It raises
yeah.
your conscience to be seated in a building that has the energy of sorrow recorded in it, and then to bring art pieces that say, I know sorrow was once here, but let me tell you what I could do with the sorrow to transform it into something of healing. Could you tell us a little bit about
yeah.
the exhibition?
Yes. 10,000 people to visit an art exhibition in Lebanon is definitely a first in our history. If not Lebanon, perhaps even the Middle East itself. I learned a lot of things from this experience. First of all, that as humans, we're always ready for the opportunity to heal and reconcile. I believe that love is our true essence, and any opportunity that's presented to go back to that, you know, people desire that deep down inside. And so if you can create a space that welcomes that, a space where people feel safe and secure to come and share, then magic can happen. An opportunity to connect to source can happen. I think that this is where art plays a big role, that it creates space for dialogue, it creates space for disagreement, it creates space for inspiration, entertainment, digging deep into our souls and asking the hard questions. And that's really the beauty that art can do, and perhaps politics cannot. And I think that having the artwork in the space, along with, I curated 40, so the exhibition was 40 days long, you know, this idea that it takes 40 days to create a profound transformation. So along with during the 40 days, I also curated daily workshops, lectures, conferences, academic panel discussions, film screenings. And so the idea was to also present the community with a sort of toolbox for their own personal self-healing. There were a lot of things like introduction to meditation, introduction to yoga, introduction to Reiki classes, as well as, you know, very highbrow academic panel discussions. And so having this variety of workshops also encouraged people who perhaps might not always, you know, have felt comfortable coming to an art exhibition or an exhibition on healing. It was very important to develop this variety in workshops to provide opportunities for people to come. So that really played a large role. But ultimately, I mean, it was a combination of the space and the work and the feeling of compassion and forgiveness that was so present in the work that drew people to come and call their friends and tell them to come. It was all over social media and Instagram, and there were hashtags. And it was really, so many of the people who came were reoccurring also, because they wanted to keep coming back and have this opportunity to do their own self-healing. And that was really brilliant. There were some people who had not been able to talk about their pain from the Civil War since the war ended. And during some of these workshops and lectures, they opened up for the first time. There was a man who fought in the building as a child soldier who came back for the first time since the 70s. It was the first time he stepped foot in the building. And he came up to me and started talking to me. And he said, thank you. And when I asked him why, he told me, you know, that he had been fighting in the building, and he left Lebanon soon after the war ended, and it took him years and years to come to terms with what he had done. And then stepping into this building, the first thing he saw was a sculpture that I had laid on the floor It was 108 ceramic tiles, and each one had the word forgiveness, ghufran in Arabic, imprinted on it. So it was forgiveness 108 times. And he said, thank you for that. And I understood then how important it is to really address all sides, you know, all sides that take part in war.
Well, that's what you need to do when you're looking at healing and reconciliation as well. And I love the fact that you had 108. It's such an auspicious number.
Yeah.
It is known as the 108 beads of the Rosary of Victory.
Yeah.
All right, so you have started, you founded Xanadu, which was an art collective in New York City to help Arab artists during the time of extreme xenophobia after the 9/11 attacks. Could you touch on that just a little bit? And I also want to hear about the Ackman Institute before we come to a close of our conversation.
Okay. So I was living in New York during 9/11, and the morning that happened, I was actually having a very horrible dream, almost a premonition, and I woke up and immediately I heard that there was something going on, and I ran down to the streets, and while everyone was running away from the buildings, I was running towards them. And I was with two friends, and we were both, all three of us were Lebanese, and somehow we knew that it was important for us to witness what was happening. And having had experience in war and conflict, you know, there was the desire also to know what's going on, to understand what's going on. So I ran straight towards the buildings as far down as I could go. And as I watched the first building fall, I knew at that moment that I'm going to have a role to play in terms of healing and reconciliation. And this is already, my gut was telling me that as an Arab woman, I'm going to have to step up. And I don't know, you know, that was something that came from the universe. And that's before we even heard about who was behind it or what was going on. So it was a kind of divine message that I received very openly and I welcomed. And so the first thing I did after, you know, after things had calmed down a little was to start this little space in the village on Thompson Street. One of my close friends owns a chess shop, and he came up with the idea. He had found a space where we could do the event, and I came up with a series of curated proposals, and together we put this this thing called Xanadu. We called it Xanadu, a beautiful place, because we wanted the Arab community to be able to come to the New York community and heal together in this space through art. And so somehow, you know, the seeds of what I'm doing here in Lebanon kind of started then and there. And I did that for a few years. And at some point, you know, it was also, it was a financial difficulty. And the importance was to keep the chess shop going, chess forum. And it was very difficult to maintain. And then at some point, I decided my role is I've done what I need to do in the States, and it's time to come back to Lebanon and implement this work here, because terror was everywhere now. Started doing this type of work in Lebanon, but it wasn't until recently that I've put a name to it, and I'm calling it the Ackman Institute. But really, they're events where I try to bring the community together for healing, either through things like Reading for Peace, where we'll sit in an abandoned building, a war-torn building, and read poetry together. Or we'll do some mantra painting exercises where I give people the words that I use in my healing ceremonies, which are love, compassion, forgiveness, peace, mawadda, rahma, ghufran, salam. And we paint these in Arabic together and, you know, learn about the power of mantra and setting intentions and repeating the words. So it's sort of these one-off events under the umbrella of Healing Lebanon.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you chose the name Ackman Institute, does that have an English meaning? Because when I hear it, I think of soul, like Atma.
Yeah.
right?
Exactly. It comes from the Sanskrit. So I've been studying Sanskrit mantras in India with my wonderful teacher, Anandra George, who has established a great program called the Heart of Sound. And we've been able to go deep into, I was already using mantras in Arabic in my work, and I wanted the opportunity to study further. So I found this program in India in Rishikesh, and I've been going and, really understanding the power of sacred sound and vibration, and how through the words that we utter, we can change the world around us simply through sound and vibration.
I love it. I love it. I love that you have this deep, ancient, mystical roots bubbling inside of you. And I know your heavy metal, hard rock times, we have to get on another call regarding that. Because we do definitely have that wild side in common. And hey, I just want to say thanks for the work that has been called for you to do, and that you've
Thank
not
you.
Shied away from it and continued all the best. And just continued healing. Leave us with a website and whatever closing remarks. If you have an event or an exhibit coming up, the show is in 90 countries. It's also in Lebanon. So please leave us some information, and we'd love to keep up with you.
Sure. Thank you so much. So my website is my name, ZainaElKhalil.com. And I'm mostly present on Instagram and social media, and I would love to invite you to follow my journey there. You can see some of the work that I do here. My handle is at Zaina El Khalil in English. And you can see some of what I do with the healing ceremonies, which involves chanting and whirling and painting and dancing and meditation. I also work a lot with Syrian refugees, teaching them yoga and art. I'm a bit of a poet and a writer, and I put some of that stuff up there too. And I'm really trying to connect on a human level, a woman in Beirut, but on a very kind of universal human level. We're all one and the same.
Absolutely, and you definitely are. And so we'll definitely keep up with your journey. And once again, heartfelt thanks and appreciation.
Thank you so much, sister. Thank you so much.
Take good care. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Zaina El-Khalil and just the work and her passion, and also the fact that she answered her call. When you answer your call, you're fulfilling your sacred contract. Yes, we have to make money, we have to pay bills, and so we might be doing a 9-to-5 that we're not always completely satisfied with, or we might be going by the norms of the society. But do remember, there's nothing normal about the society right now. So it's in need of some creative thinking, some motivated people, some authentic people, and people with a lot of courage and determination. So you can visit her work at Zaina El Khalil, that's ZenaElKhalil. Now, guess who just came into the studios? Sister Gita. We have not heard from her in months. And so we would love to find out what she's been up to and what she has for us on the air and what some of her beautiful stories. Sister Gita, welcome.
Good day and Om Shanti. Om Shanti is a greeting of peace. All of us, whether we're aware or not, deep inside of us, our original nature is peace and silence. We have just forgotten. Something has caught my mind. Let me recognize that everything that is happening in the great drama of life is beneficial, and my courage will never fail. I have trust in this. Okay, we talk about trust. Trust is essential if you want to help people. There are two kinds of trust: trusting others and getting others to trust you. People will naturally start trusting you when they see you overcoming problems in a reliable and constant way. However, a more powerful and long-term way of gaining people's trust is to give them the experience of your trust in them. This is an art which can be cultivated by the following. never listen to gossip and never foster it in yourself. Never listen to gossip and never foster it yourself. Form neither judgments nor opinions. Rather, be spiritual and clean in your feelings. Learn to develop good wishes for others. Very powerful. Learn to develop good wishes for others. This will be the ultimate measure of your ability to trust. Learn to have good wishes for others. I know Sister Jenna has a lot of trust in many people, and it's wah, 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 so that's good. Maybe she has good wishes for others. I trust you all. May good wishes, touched by God's pure energy of deep love, touch all of us and get us into that feeling of trusting that whatever is going on now, there is benefit in it. Okay? Om Shanti.
Thank you. That was lovely. You always transport us up above. I love that. Well, remember everyone, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we really are here to love each other the same. Now, remember, coming up August 7th to the 9th will be Finding Common Ground for the Summer of Peace Summit. Please go to summeroffeace.net for more information and visit me and others at the California Vision 2020 in Sacramento, California, September 20th to 23rd, so we can raise the vibrations. Going to end today's conversation with MC Yogi. Love is all we need. After just a few messages. Take care, everyone.
The America Meditating Radio is proud to partner with Shift the Network on the Summer of Peace Telesummit with Bob Thurman, Carolyn Mace, Hawk Newsom, Kalita Brohi, Daryl Davis, Chief Silver Moyer, and many more amazing peacekeepers. Register now for free at summeroffeace.net for the August 7th to 9th Telesummit today. It's our time to bring peace alive.
Just throw your hands up.
I'm Sister Jenna. You've been listening to America Meditating Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Did you enjoy that conversation? Because you can also listen to it on Spotify or in iTunes, 24/7, anytime, anywhere. I do trust we all have inner power to become our very best. When we listen with curiosity to learn more, we grow. So thanks so much for tuning in, and do be easy on yourself. Take care.